Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Episode, so I don't know if this one sort of lives up to the hype of the last soft intro instead of just the straight up. What's that?
Perhaps it can, because you know, you and I have talked a multitude of times about what President Obama, after he was out of office, of course, of late called the circular firing squad that was going on amongst Democrats for their presidential nomination, right?
Yeah.
And Politico pointed out that cancel culture is one of the things that Barack Obama and Donald Trump actually agree on, you know, gasp. And it's really fascinating to me to look at now, as opposed to when you and I were both stationed at Walter Reed for the 2012 election, in that I don't think Barack Obama could get the nomination today. And I know that's a very outrageous thing, perhaps, to say at first, you know, wait a minute, what? Our first black president, a Democrat? No, I'm sorry. He couldn't.
Well,
he's not willing to adhere to the extremes of whatever fringe simply for a vote.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing we probably could agree on, but correct me if I'm wrong, is that I think Obama's cancel culture is different from Trump's cancel culture. I don't think they see eye to eye on what cancel culture. To me, Trump's cancel culture is anyone who just doesn't agree with him, whereas Obama's actually narrowing down the sort of identity politic issue
to a certain degree.
I know, to a certain degree, but mostly.
You're right to a certain degree, but aside from the outrage of certain outlets labeling the president's speech at Mount Rushmore white supremacy speech, I'm going, okay, so let's see. Teddy Roosevelt, the first modern progressive being, you know, that was being celebrated, right, white supremacy. Moving right along. And that's Exhibit A, perhaps.
Yeah.
But I think that President Trump, whether it was his thoughts or someone else's, hit on something there. When it really was accurate. They don't like where you went to school. They don't like the verbs and adverbs you use. You know, unless you speak this specific language that's, you know, delineated, that's required. I mean, Bill Maher hit on the same thing, in that, you know, like even Ellen had to issue an apology because she didn't say in a tweet that Black Lives Mattered. She said that, I think we can, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think we can agree that colored people have faced an uphill battle in this country. She got called out for that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we're at now with that whole thing.
To be honest, I think it's interesting how this is maybe a pickup from the last episode, but hey, look, before we get into it, we're about 3 minutes in, 4 minutes in almost, and we haven't acknowledged the fact that you are listening to the one and only Mod State Podcast. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in, or whoever you identify as, from wherever you are in the world, whether that be international or domestic here in the United States. If you can, please head over to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces. So, where were we? Oh yeah, cancel culture. It's actually interesting to see the evolution over the last, pretty much, it's kind of been post first surge in COVID, or in just the last month, really, that the mainstream media has begun to pick up on what cancel culture really is. And I'm not surprised, because I think it really has come to light now that the Black Lives Matter movement, the push to equality, is far more.
They know what it is, Nate. The issue they have. It's now just the first time it's getting pointed at them.
Yeah, which, and I agree with you. I agree with you. But it is the first time I'm really seeing it brought up in mainstream media.
Yeah, as in CNN is going, and in the New York Times going, oh my God, like WTF. Well, it's not that they really care about the hypocrisy there, Nate.
a lot of people are, I don't say lots of folks are, like the president.
the guy living in his basement in New Jersey.
Yeah. There's been a lot of discussion, at least prior to this, on different podcasts. Different thinkers have asked the question as what sort of makes cancel culture implode, or at least sort of like mean regress, if you will, so that it sort of has a bit more logic to it. So, if people have, quote unquote, an unpopular opinion or just an opinion that goes in the face of whatever logic the cancel culture is pushing forward, that it isn't a situation where you're doxxed or you're just ruined forever. And I think that's this idea to cancel entirely forever is a bit insane. But the question has always been, like, what is it going to take for that to sort of, like, again, mean regress or just become normal is not even the right word. I don't know what it is, but I don't think a lot of people have thought about it, have not had a good answer to it. But I think when it starts to infiltrate into the mainstream media, or it starts to infiltrate or become an issue in just sort of average Americans' lives, when they're bringing their opinion or their thoughts to the table, and all of a sudden they're told you can't actually think that way. I think that's where the buck stops, because ultimately it's a minority.
That's probably accurate.
Yeah, like a minority population, if you will, like less amount of people that are pushing sort of the cancel culture agenda. And I think that the buck stops at average people who really the skin isn't in the game in terms of their notoriety and followership, but all of a sudden they're being told they're canceled. And it's like, okay, I don't care. Like, you're ridiculous. And it sort of just stops there. I could be wrong, though.
I don't think you're wrong. We come from the platform of a publication that will not be canceled because we don't follow that script. You know, this is like a toned down political version, in a sense, of South Park, in that if you can't take a joke, this is not the place for you. If you can't take actual discussion on an issue, God forbid, I know, hearing more than one side of an issue, then this is not the place for you.
Well, but yeah, I think that's it. It's like there is a place for, what's the word I'm looking for? It's for the grownups. Like, people are going to disagree. It doesn't mean that you have to be able to take it in context, like where people actually stand.
Well, that was Bill Maher's entire point. I believe I sent you that clip. It's about 5 minutes long, but he was talking about, you know, this gotcha culture of, okay, so we were supposed to on Juneteenth, and I'm not mocking Juneteenth, and I'm not mocking posting a black square, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Square, rectangle. I'm sure somebody's going to foam at the mouth because I got that wrong. But, you know, Bill Maher made the point. But then there were people that got criticized for posting something else on a different topic later that day or later that week. And he said, so what? For the rest of their time on social media, they're supposed to post nothing but a blank black page, or else they're not woke. I mean, that's where we're at now. And I'll give you folks a hint. With this creating more and more disgust, and I'm aiming, shock of all shocks, most of my fire here at millennials, the farther you push this, let me give you a hint as to whose support you're actually helping solidify here. It's not Joe Biden's. Okay? That it's quite ironic to me.
Yeah.
Who they're driving people towards. And I'm not saying that's going to decide the election by any means. But this to me feeds right back into the same. And you may say this is a stretch, but to me it's 6 degrees of separation here from the same we've been ignored mentality of the working class folks in the Rust Belt that swung for Trump in 2016. That's precisely why. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because now we've got academia, who they were the young radicals in the 60s that are calling the shots in the academic circles now. I mean, for God's sake, we had people saying, well, should we make people take their exams in 2016, you know, after Donald Trump won? Are you serious right now? This is not a serious discussion. You know, so now if you don't exactly phrase things right, again, I go back to Alan got heat for not perfectly phrasing her tweet in support of Black Lives Matter the right way. And this isn't me picking on that movement, that issue at all. This is me saying, no, we've hamstrung civil discourse in this country. So you've got an element now that says, you know what? That's cool. We're just not going to engage. So if nobody engages in discourse anymore in this country, I mean, how much longer until we don't have a country?
Yeah. I think that's been a bit of the common criticism on the left's movement. And I'm not saying that anyone needs to bracket themselves as a Republican or a Democrat. Obviously, there's some fracturing within the Democratic movement, or should just say the left movement in general. But, you know, I think what has come out of the cancel culture is a bit, I mean, academia plays a role in this. However, a huge role in it. But what has also played a role is the identity politics.
We're talking about the 1619 Project, for instance, was trying to tell people, now it's been amended ad nauseum, of course, because of the falsehoods, but initially tried to tell people that the American Revolution was solely about slavery. Mm. And I'm going, are you guys high?
Well,
like right now?
Again, I think it's interesting because, you know, again, fully support a push to equality, Black Lives Matter.
So
fully,
like, fine. Just it's not like, what I'm it's, driving
at. Exactly. But I think what's crazy is that we don't need, and I'm fully on board to rewrite the narrative as the way it is truthfully, right? So
right.
I don't
and
have a problem.
Make stuff up, like the article in The Atlantic that totally made up and still hasn't acknowledged the fact-checking the Federalist did, by the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's not enough crap going on right now. We're going to make up a shooting of a kid in a gymnasium that nobody can verify.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, so we're going to go so far, like I've said before in this podcast, okay, you can't have it both ways. I'll cede to you or whoever else. The American Civil War was, yes, 100% about nothing but slavery. With that, however, you cannot logically, historically, then go back to the American Revolution and say that this country was founded as a racist country. Why? Because the reason that the Southern states left, and that is specifically because the United States Constitution did not make any provision or safe harbor for the future of slavery. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I guess I haven't spent as much time thinking about all the things that the narratives that we would like to change, whether that's like why the American Revolution was fought. And I guess what I mean by that is I don't think most people do. I think most people see it as the birth of our nation and to them, whether or not it was fought for, like just hypothetically, if it was fought to preserve slavery or something ridiculous like that.
Are the same people that will tell you that it was a matter of all the slaves were simply stolen from the African continent. They would ignore the actual slave selling that went on amongst Africans. Yeah, it's beyond bizarre to me. Look,
well,
history's pretty. Yeah.
No, history's not. But again, there's just certain things that I think, again, and maybe I need a level of education as well, but look, it makes sense to me to get rid of Columbus Day or tell the narrative of really what really happened when
sure.
that guy found
yeah. like it goes so far as to say that it's racist to fly the 13-star colonial flag, Nate. Are you willing to go that far?
I don't care. It's
that's not what I asked you.
Yeah, is it racist? I don't know. I mean, if we're going to say, did Thomas Jefferson own slaves and therefore he's associated as a founding father and we can't fly the flag from the 13 colonies because slavery existed. No, first off, no one's flying that flag anyway. We have a flag with that represents the foundation of our country, but also the stars to represent the states. So if you're flying an antique flag, like I don't care if you're butthurt by it or not. It's not the Confederate flag and it doesn't have It was the intention of it was never seated in racism, as far as I know. Whereas
maybe I framed that poorly. Maybe this is actually more what I'm driving at, and this is relevant today, tomorrow, the next day, the next decade, the next century. Okay. Just because we fail to live up to the ideals, which in my opinion, and in the opinion of the vast majority of even academia in this country, the world abroad is envious of what our founding fathers accomplished, okay, in terms of the Declaration, the Constitution, et al. Okay, simply because we fail to live up to our ideals in any situation, does that mean we go, you know what, screw it, we're not trying anymore? I mean, we set up Mod State to be a place where all discourse that does not encourage violence has a place. Well, so because we fail in this, that, or the other area, does that mean we go, you know what, those values are worthless? Mm-hmm. Of course not. I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah.
And that's what I hear now. It's because, you know, we failed to live up. I mean, for God's sake, we're going to cancel Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah.
Seriously, you guys are high.
Well, I think it's there is a there's a standard that's set, right? And I'm happy with standards. I'm, you know, we all, I think, whether it's through religion or not, we set up our values, or at least I think good people should set up their values and their principles in their own personal constitution by something for which they stand for. And it's, we don't always live up to those expectations. We try to meet them. We try to exceed them in some cases. But you're right, just because we don't meet the standard for which we've set for ourselves doesn't mean that the standard that we've set itself must be thrown away. And I think it's, there's, what are we asking for? Are we asking for perfection in and out all the time? I guess it's sort of comes back to, looking at yourself. What does the Bible say? Get rid of that. But, you know, judge not.
Less with the same judgment you shall be judged. That brings to mind the Capitol Hill police free zone in Seattle didn't exactly accomplish utopia last I checked.
Look, here's the other thing too. I've also tried to look at this entire thing through the lens, like historical lens, right? So
would you like to see history without America?
No.
How dark things would have actually been?
I think what I've tried to ask myself multiple times over the last month is just an exercise itself, is what did it look like back in the latter half of the 1700s where you started to have a rumbling about a serious change needed? From the existing government, what did that sound like? What did a dissenter, what did a new American sound like to those people who were for the most part living? Because you can imagine as an average colonial American that, yes, taxation without representation, etc. But the disruption of daily life, at least at the latter half of the 1700s.
That is a really good point.
Probably wasn't horrible.
No, I'm serious. That's a great point, actually.
So
because the founding fathers were traitors to them.
Exactly. They could have been, or it would have taken a lot to.
Well, to loyalists, no, George Washington was a traitor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I just look at all of that through the lens of today going, okay, what I want to make sure I'm not missing something. I want to make sure that, I am fully aware of both sides here in terms of, you rarely hear me going after or criticizing protesters. I definitely criticize the president, so that's not exactly entirely fair, but there, I just want to make sure that, I'm not missing that maybe the similar thread in history that's happening right now that, because again, talking about pedestals, talking about values, talking about principles, you know, at what point are we not, and we haven't often, but met those the principles and the standards and the values that we've created in America. We often don't, but are we regressing from where we have been? Is there a need to be protesting something harder today, whether that it's beyond just Black Lives Matter, but the government as a whole in terms of potential overreach? You know, just my spidey senses are up. And
you raise a plethora of issues here that I don't disagree with, okay? And when the founders wrote that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we were all endowed with certain inalienable rights, when they said all men, first of all, they were talking about men. But did they mean all men? No. I believe in that day and age, that they meant white landowners, okay? Mm-hmm. With that, however, that does not mean that today we can't apply those same, in my opinion, beautiful standards. The closest thing to a federal representative democracy, mm-hmm. perfection, as we can hope to accomplish. I mean, it's like Bill Gates, I've referenced this a couple of times in this podcast, but what he said in a Rolling Stone interview in the last 3 or 4 years, I don't remember the exact year, but he said, okay, so let me ask you this another way. If you are black or gay or female in this country, would you really go back 50 years? Would you? Of course not.
Yeah.
That's absurd. You know, it's just as silly as the, you know, you're born racist if you're white. Really? So what would you tell the, 600 to 900,000 white men that died on the battlefield for the United States in the Civil War? What did they die for? I mean, how far do you take this? Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it distracts from the real issues that we have now. And you touched on that towards the end of what you said, in that we live in a police state, okay? Via the Patriot Act, your right to habeas corpus, to things like a trial by jury of your peers, a speedy trial, can be suspended indefinitely on suspicion of terrorism. Okay, propaganda waged towards American citizens is now legal on our soil thanks to the repeal of the Smith-Munn Act. Most people didn't pay attention. A Republican Congress passed it. President Obama signed it. Nobody noticed. Small event. But, I mean, that's an example. But there are a lot bigger issues here that, to me, I am not at all attempting to say that the cause of the protesters is insignificant. Mm-hmm. To say that Black Lives Matter is insignificant. I don't want to be heard that way. But this business of, okay, are we going to go so far as Germany? So that, I mean, just 1938 to 1945 doesn't exist. I know that probably sounds absurd, but where does this go?
Yeah. No, I'm not sure. And I think ultimately what I'm hearing, and it's almost a summary to this entire thing, is fully on board with the changes that we've been talking about here, at least for a while, that is equality, basic equality. That's basic equality of opportunity. That goes down the road of criminal justice reform. That goes to education. That goes to every aspect of life. And we all agree on that. But you also need a balance that just makes sure that we're keeping our eye on. I don't want to say the consequence of pushing back, but I do mean that in terms of what, when you start pushing back on your government, what happens? What happens at the government level, that in scary things that can happen, that can sort of put a kibosh on its citizens, right? That doesn't mean that you don't fight for that equality. You don't fight for that justice. You do. But it's also... I think you also need to be incredibly cognizant of what's happening. And I think that's, you know, maybe this is pushing away from your point, overall point, but it does bring up the interesting fact of what's been happening, the federal police force push that's going to major cities. It's just, there's so much happening right now. There's so much interesting stuff that's happening. And it's hard to keep out in front of it and really have an analysis of it, where I really appreciate, you know, I respect the very quick analysis that people have based on their political ideology. Hey, look, federal government oversight in cities where in states where they weren't asked to come, protecting federal buildings and, you know, allegedly snatching up rioters and protesters and whisking them away. There's that thing that's happening. And then there's the sort of counter narrative to that as well. And it's been crazy. I mean, at least particularly in the last week, it's been really crazy trying to stay ahead of it and trying to break it all down and analyze it and see where all these different groups of people come together and their different types of analysis on it. And I don't know. It's an insane time.
There's something to bear in mind here, though, Nate, and this is not commenting on the protesters as a body politic by any means, but there is a certain element to these protesters that they don't want what you and I want. They despise this country, and they want it torn down. You can look on YouTube and look up their quotes yourself, okay? There's a Marxist element here that wants to tear down what is. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be massive systemic reform. All right. You and I both talked about this ad nauseum. Yeah, all right.
There,
but
there absolutely
I'm
should be.
I'm inclined to throw in my oar just in general, blank check with the protesters here. Okay. Because we see what happened when they got their police free zone. Okay. Then they were crying for the police and then upset when they didn't show. Okay. Yeah. You know, you got in Atlanta over 4th of July weekend, a little girl who wasn't even old enough to get a learner's permit, they got killed in a shooting. And the mayor of Atlanta came on and said, look, this ain't on the police, y'all. This is on us. There's a certain element amongst the protests that they don't hold valuable. You know, the federal democratic republic that we have. All right, I'm not sure what their end game here is. My question is, okay, who's going to pay for it?
But my question would be, do you think it's natural to have a response like that when things aren't actually happening, right? So, like, the founding fathers did something pretty incredible with the democracy that they created. And the one thing that they did is they made it incredibly difficult and slow. And I think there's a beauty to that, but there's also, it also creates impatience. So the system was...
Do I think it's natural to want to... I'm trying to figure out what you're asking. Well, do I think it's natural to tear down the system when it doesn't work?
Well, I would say that's a good question. Is it natural to want to tear something down when it continues to not work for a large number of people? I think it's completely natural to want that.
That's a good question. I would revert back to, not that mod state is some sort of ledger, you know, any sort of roadmap for the rest of the country, I suppose, is the best way to put that. But one thing that you and I have always colloquially said is, if you're going to bitch about a problem, have a solution. Mm-hmm. And a no government, no state is not a solution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I think, again, that's a small number of people that want that. But I think...
Is it?
That want no state. I think that it's just so weird to see all these different political ideologies just thrown all over the place, coming from so many different types of people. It's hard to keep track on what one group wants today and then tomorrow. But I think to back to your point, the democracy in the United States was created to act slowly, and unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's not happening quick enough, or there's just been such a large amount of inaction, even though topics have been brought up over so many number of years, that this is the reaction that you ultimately have. Put it in the stew with 2020 with COVID-19, the fact that the unemployment rate's high, and people really have struggled to have a living wage in the United States for quite a while, or at least the economic boom post the Great Recession has really benefited only a few number as opposed to many. This is what you get. This is what you get. And you know, I'll be honest with you. There's the, whatever we want to call it. We want to call it the Marxist commie sort of undertones of the, these protests and riots in Portland and Seattle. Like, yes. You know, there's always going to be those folks that are going to come to the gunfight and maybe sustain it a little bit longer than a lot of people. But ultimately, I think a lot of Americans are just kind of pissed and fed up. I think it's a broader, I think you can look at that and then take a pulse check in the United States. And it could be, I think there's just a level of anger that's out there, and it doesn't have to be everyone's agreeing on the same thing to be angry with, but it's, you're angry on the right, and then you're also angry on the left. There's just the pulse check of America right now is just ramped up to the movie, Spinal Tap, we're at 11. So I think it's natural when there is inaction, when people aren't getting what they need, when they can look back historically, not that long ago, and we were doing pretty damn well, people are going to want to tear it down. People are going to want crazy change. And it's I don't think that's an unnatural thing to want. And again, this is, it's almost as if it's a perfect storm. 2020, it's a bit of a perfect storm.
I'm not disagreeing with you that there is there definitely is reason for outrage here. Okay, I meant every word of what I wrote on the in support of Black Lives Matters, which people can view under Contrast is the name of the article. Okay, I get it. All right, but I also, in looking at Sad Pulse on the American people, I don't look at this and go, okay, so the answer is to tear down the judicial system that we have. Mm-hmm. The answer is to, quote unquote, defund police and put it into 1,000 other programs, as you put it, I think, 2-3 episodes ago. Mm-hmm. I don't think the American people as a body politic would agree with that. Okay. Do we need massive reform? Absolutely. And I'm on board with that. But at the same time, I look at a lot of these protesters and I see a little known 1960s group called the MC5, who their slogan, and I'm not going to paraphrase here, was drugs, rock and roll, and fucking in the streets. It's like Wild in the Streets, the film, you know, Max mm-hmm. Frost for president. Okay, so what's your policy agenda here for to rebuild? You know, one of the quote leaders of the CHOP in Seattle said, yeah, we're going to burn the MFer down and build the shit up back up again. Okay, with whose tax dollars, homeboy?
Yeah.
You think Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates are going to stand by and pay tax dollars into that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no pragmatism to this. That's the thing. I mean, who's paying for that?
So are we, I guess my next question is, look, so Fox News runs an ungodly amount of ungodly amount of hours and time building as if the entire left is CHOP in Seattle.
I have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, which is insane, and but it sells. It sells.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, Mike, no, I realize that, but it is the case. Not necessarily okay, what you said.
But I don't. My point to you is I shouldn't be linked into that.
No, I'm not. I'm not linking you in. What I'm saying is, these type of movements, the CHOP movement or whatever it is, exists. I hear you loud and clear. But how much?
Oh yeah, plus days in Portland. I'm sure they love it.
How much merit do we give that to the broader movement that happened and started right around, well, George Floyd? Have we sort of lost, like, yes, there's been 50 nights of protest in Portland. Cool. Like, all right. There's CHOP in Seattle. Cool. You know, awesome. Are we really subscribing this much weight to the overall issues that are going on in the United States today? Meaning, is it like noted? It's happened. There's some Marxists. There's some commies in there. Cool, you know, sweet bro. But are we really? are we really, should we really be having this conversation? Like, we should be really worried about something right now, or should we be super worried the way Fox News and Hannity is super worried about CHOP in Seattle, or are we just sort of losing sight on what's happening right now? There's always going to be wackadoos.
Hold on just a second. I think you're right on the point that we should actually be focusing on the quote police reform that George Floyd's just miserable, awful death rightfully inspired. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the other side of that is this isn't just Fox News. Okay. Because I mean, how many links do I send you from Fox News?
Okay. Tracking.
So what I'm driving at here is there's no pragmatism. There's no policy solution coming from there. And CHOP by day was one thing. Go ahead and look up CHOP by night. All right. There's no plan going forward here for the American people. I'm all about, hey, let's reform the system. Okay. But there's a certain disconnect here. And that some of these folks, they're not heralding George Floyd's name. They're not about that.
No, they're almost hijacking a movement.
Well, it's precisely what it is. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've gone so far as, oh, we need to add more Supreme Court justices to the court. Okay, FDR. I mean, that's the thing. That's where we're at. And, you know, speaking of which, I'm glad I thought of that because I want to absolutely go on record right now, even though I'm not a big fan of Representative Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York. I do want to go on record right now of saying that the treatment of her at the hands of the Republican Representative Yoho from Florida is abysmal. And the minority leader of the House, Kevin McCarthy, Republican in California, should not have to be called on the carpet to say, hey, it's a good idea to censure said conduct. Regardless of whatever precise words were said against her person, it was ad hominem. It was personal. And they had supposedly never even met. And is that the kind of discourse that we need right now? I mean, politically speaking, way to go, man. You really handed the Democrats a wonderful weapon here. Mm-hmm. But on a personal level, forgetting party, it was outrageous. I mean, I don't get the vitriol and the venom aimed towards this young woman who, in my mind, sure, as I've said, I mean, how many times when here, I find it fascinating somebody with a degree in economics to cause a $32 trillion budget shortfall as a result of the Green New Deal plan. She calls those questions puzzling. I've said that a number of times on here, okay? But I also don't see how it advances dialogue in this country to get personal, to get ad hominem. And just on a personal level, it was denigrating. And I want to go on record because, again, I'm not a card-carrying member of any party. And I don't know, it was...
Well, I will say her response to that, I don't mean to cut you off, her response to that was arguably, in terms of the public record, was some of the most profound. Her statement to it on the floor was, I think, generationally, at least for feminists, for women, was one of the more profound things she said. And that's it. I mean, that's he did what he did, whether they met, whether they didn't meet. His response to it was, like, I'll be honest with you, man. He hid behind his wife. He hid behind his daughters. He hid behind his God. He said what he said. I mean, his response to it, to me,
suggests that he is guilty as charged in terms of what he supposedly said. Because if you didn't say that, then you would have come back right away with said it. She's bullshit.
Yeah. No, she came up and she called him out. And she called out every man that talks to women that way. Across America, and it was brilliant.
It's reprehensible conduct, and there's no place for it in our legislature. It definitely hamstrings dialogue.
I just don't. I guess I just don't understand. I mean, they're politicians. They're lawyers. It's their job. But if you ever talk to a bunch of lawyers, it's debate. They can be upset by stuff. They can work through it. And at the end of the day, we clink beer glasses and let's get back to work. Let's get back to work tomorrow. But man, she is just standing.
75%+ of the legislature's trial lawyers.
Yeah. It's just, holy shit. It, it, that's what it came to. That man feels that strongly about her and what she represents, and that I just don't know. I don't really get it.
What I find interesting is, and again, I have no particular dog in this fight, but what I find interesting is the whole, well, she was a mid-20-something bartender. How is she qualified to run for office? And I'm going, do we really want to go there? We really want to get down into the nitty-gritty of who's qualified for what?
Yeah.
I don't know that you do. I felt sorry for her.
Yeah. Well, her response was great. You know, it's the little things like this that, you know, I feel sorry for her.
I didn't just, mean it like that.
No. It didn't need to happen to her. It was unwarranted. However, when
she's
the
human being, though, man, yeah, is why I said that.
No, absolutely.
She hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't feel good. But it's,
that's how
it's,
I meant. I'm not saying she's some poor damsel in distress that needs a strong male to come rescue her. No, I'm just saying.
She did perfectly fine herself.
Yes, I'm just saying person to person.
Yeah.
I felt awful about it.
Absolutely. But it's these, if again, I believe fully that COVID has shown the character of so many people that maybe you're like, I really don't know where that person stands, or there's something about that person. I can't really peg it. All COVID needed to happen, and most of that stuff gets flushed out, and you see where people stand. You know, especially older men, and I don't know what it is, older white men, when you continue to do stuff like this, when you call women like what you did, stupid fucking bitch or whatever it was, you're going to get called out.
That wasn't nice.
You're revealing your character, and you're going to get called out for it in a completely different way in 2020 than you maybe would have 20 years ago or 30 years ago. It just doesn't work that way today.
Well, yeah.
So I say, keep them coming. Keep it coming, man. We need to know, you know, we'll figure out who's who slowly but surely.
I see what you're driving at, but I'm not so sure about the white man thing, especially. I mean, I doubt that, I don't know, Death Row Records or even Motown is necessarily friendly to women now, but I think it's more just...
Aren't they owned by, Death Row's owned by Hasbro now.
I'm throwing out the hip hop recording industry. I don't think it's very, if you want to watch some of their music videos, I'll let you get back to me on how friendly you think it is to women to work in that environment. My point is, as not as a small government 75% white male, if you want to peg me that way, my response is actually one as being one of the biggest non-democratic party feminists you're ever going to meet.
Yeah.
And so I think that, no, he would not have made such remarks about, you know, somebody, a man that he respected or even tolerated. And to me, the bigger point is, how did you hope to advance any semblance of public discourse here? Mm-hmm. Because last I checked, you're supposed to be indicative of the will of your people. You're a representative of your people. And so that's the image you want to portray. That's what you're about.
Yeah.
I mean, so
maybe threw all the cards on this table. He's not running for re-election anyway. So I don't know.
That's probably for the best.
It probably is.
I mean, you know, so have they said yet when the first of these three shit shows, I mean, debates is supposed to occur?
Not yet. All I know is that, you know, one thing we absolutely did not
live stream these. Oh, holy crap. I'm serious.
What did we talk about for the last 45 minutes? One thing, not really debate related, but at least RNC debated, is now that's not happening in Florida. So that's another thing that President Trump has walked back.
You know what? Nothing is happening.
What else has been walked back? Apparently, according to the president, he's into saving American lives and we should all be wearing masks. So that's fun. I wonder, like, first off, good on you, Mr. President.
He's right on China.
It's about time. But
he's right on China. I stand by him on that.
Yeah, that's fine. I would prefer him not to to be derogatory. We can call China out, but we don't need to call it the China flu. We don't need to call it Kung flu.
Talking about that.
Yeah,
I was talking about trying to prevent Huawei from being a part of 5G networks in Western Europe and the United States. I think he's spot on.
I'm completely fine with that.
The law that they passed in 2017, which ironic to me, they called it passing. You mean you instituted this?
Yeah.
That requires their technology firms to provide a backdoor for intelligence purposes. I think the Secretary of State and the President are spot on that. And I'm not so sure how fervent another leader would be in that respect. But that's one. Yeah. You know?
No, and look, I agree with that. I also agree, and I'm happy the president is now making people wear masks. I think one thing I've been nervous about.
We've lost 6 months.
Yeah, one thing I've been nervous.
Disappoint. You let another 500,000 people die.
I guess my question is, I think history will show very clearly that whatever day it was, someone in his administration got to him and said, listen, you are losing. It does not matter by what margins at this point, you are losing. And you need to step up and start telling and start taking control of this. Not taking responsibility, but take control of it.
So
what's that?
So what? How many national politicians do you know that you can honestly say, I'm not talking about AOC, okay, freshman to the game, but how many entrenched politicians do you know of that are not transactionalists by nature?
Yeah, but I guess the difference is this is the president of the United States. He's the CEO. He's the chief executive officer of the United States. And he's losing because people don't have confidence in him and the way he's handling it.
The professor got fired for saying that.
For saying what?
That Donald Trump is the president. Oh. That's how scary this era is. I'm not a card-carrying member of any party, and I'm certainly not his attorney, don't want to be. But history is written by men who have hanged heroes. Okay? I mean, I know it may seem absurd to say, but you know, they exhumed Napoleon Bonaparte's body to see if he was poisoned, died by arsenic poisoning. They couldn't prove that one way or the other conclusively, but they did find out that he was nearly 5'7", which put him slightly above average height at the time.
Yeah, that was all him, man. That was his little marketing ploy.
Well, I mean, also the English misunderstood le petit corporal, which, you know, to them translated literally meant little soldier, but no, it was because he would get off horseback and go and eat amongst the enlisted. So it was like the French saying, he's one of us. The point in me saying that is, if you want your history written correctly, you better write it yourself. I mean, so do you really blame the president for wanting to dictate his own media here?
I'm just saying, man, it might be a day late and a dollar short.
Yeah, perhaps. I guess I come back to, again, nobody's right if everybody's wrong. I mean, this whole the more I look into the Peter Strzok text, and the more I look back, I'm not saying there was no there in terms of Ukraine, Russia et al., but it certainly wasn't a bunch of innocent fleece and lambs on the other side.
No.
It's like, how righteous are we if we have to smear and lie to get somebody? I don't know. I'm not sitting here being a Trump defender by any means, but I gotta tell you, the more time goes on, the less impressed I am with men like Robert Mueller. I gotta be real.
Well, yeah, it's
I'm sure that's heresy in the mainstream, but
well,
I won't be canceled. Don't kiss my ass.
You will not be canceled.
We're not going to be. We've always been about talking about the issues as they come about. And hey, I've come on here, what, two or three times with factual inaccuracy that I stated and said that I was wrong and apologized.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to do so.
Well, that's what we do as humans. We acknowledge or as good humans, we acknowledge when we are wrong and we apologize if it's necessary, and then we drive on because.
No, but what needs to happen, Nate, if you're woke enough, we just need to line them up and shoot them.
Yeah.
And they're clear. There's no room for human error. I mean, you know, that's the other thing that feeds into. It's like, so there's no incentive for anybody to apologize, is there? I mean, if you can't come back, why acknowledge when you're wrong? Enters the stage, Trump, Donald.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see what I'm getting at?
I get it. I think we're at that point, though, where most of America didn't need to know what cancel culture was because they weren't part of it. As it seeps into the mainstream life of most Americans, I think most people won't stand for it.
I know, you're not blaming that on Donald Trump.
No. What, cancel culture?
It's gotten to the point of incredulity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know our listeners love you a lot more than me, and you know, at this point, I'm okay with that, but I just, and you know this, from our private texts ad nauseum, I'm not a huge fan, but at the same time, I certainly see at times when I look at the quote opposition to the president, I certainly see at times what some of his supporters are driving at.
Sure.
I do.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, being a human being, I guess... just because you like a president for whatever reason, you know, even if it's a reason that I don't necessarily agree with, doesn't make you fundamentally a bad person.
Well,
I don't know if that makes sense or not, but
will you tell me, Nate, what incentive is there now aside from doing the quote right thing, which let me know how far that takes you in America. You know, no good deed goes unpunished. What incentive is there for a, quote, pop culture figure, political leader, to acknowledge wrong and say, hey, I repent, I want to do something different, when it doesn't matter what you do?
For God's sake,
Robert Downey Jr. is still getting called out about Tropic Thunder. This is bullshit.
Yeah, but I think what it takes is it takes a person, whoever that is, who will apologize and just drive on and set the example that this is, but that person also will almost need to be at like a cult like worship level where I don't know what that person looks like, that pop culture person. It's sort of like some dude that's just too cool for school. Everyone just worships the ground he walks on, or her. And says something stupid, and he's like, look, man, I apologize, I'm driving on, and you know what, fuck you, if you think I shouldn't exist anymore. And I don't know what that person looks like. Obviously, that's what we should probably do, but I don't know if that person at a level of leadership that we're talking about exists right now. That can silence that sort of cancel culture if the one person can do it. But I just don't know what that person looks like, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Part of it is I look at concerns like these and I see the point. A Republican presidential candidate would have to drop out of the race if it was found out that 40 years ago, when referring to integrated schools, they said, I'm paraphrasing the first part because I don't remember their exact wording, but I don't want my kids going to a jungle school. That's going to be a jungle school district. That was Joe Biden in the late 70s talking about his kids going to integrated schools. A Republican candidate could not survive that, period. I mean, this guy doesn't know what state he's in.
Okay. Yeah, check
back to the time he forgot what state he was born in when he was talking in Pennsylvania, and the state he represented when he was speaking in Delaware.
Maybe he's the guy.
Same school district?
Maybe he's the guy I'm alluding to.
Maybe I just proved your point.
Maybe you did. I mean, I don't think Joe Biden survives that. You know what? Joe Biden doesn't survive without Donald Trump, though. I think that's another thing. So
here's the thing: does Joe Biden survive?
Yeah.
Is he going to make it through this?
He will. He's not working that hard. Lincoln Project's
stuck in the basement. It's been the best non-campaign ever run, and genius. It's just let the president hang himself.
The least stressful presidential campaign on planet Earth. He's hanging out. The Lincoln Project is just harpooning the president over and over and over.
Why run against the president when Republicans will do it for you?
Shit, man. Just sit back. Put on those sweet-ass aviators. Let the president try to fumble his way back. Like, that's patriotic to wear a mask. Like, oh, my God, sir. 2 days, 48 hours ago, you're being an asshole about this.
I like Joe Biden. I've long thought of him in that whole Midwestern, aw, shucks vein, you know. As a centrist and aisle crosser, I totally got what he was talking about when he referred to Strom, Thurmond, and company. I'm not going back through it because God knows I don't want to hear it. But I probably just made your case for you, and so what? It'll be the fourth or fifth time I've had to say, hey, I didn't misspeak, but I was wrong. I ain't too proud to beg, baby, you know, but maybe he is the guy. I don't know. Just this is Disneyland, this whole deal. I don't know.
It all is very much Disneyland. It's
been a great debate season.
I can't wait.
We should live stream them. We really, well, not necessarily live stream them, but I feel like we should record throughout the three debates. You know, do a precast before the debate, then, you know, come up with parse together clips.
Oh, we could probably.
It's just going to be rolled gold.
We could probably live stream it. I mean, we could just plug the audio in and listen to it. I don't know. Any listeners out there that think that's a good idea, let us know, because that'd be interesting.
It's a bad idea.
Well, it's not a bad idea. That's for sure. But anyway.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You're like, all right, Jesus, how do I get out of this? No. I got to go.
Oh, I've been getting out of podcast episodes for 230 of them, so I'm pretty good at it. But we are approaching 1 hour, 15 minutes over what we typically run. And I've got homework to do. I've got food to eat and shit to do. But as always, my friend, it's an honor and a privilege to do this with you week in and week out. And what the listeners don't see is day in and day out conversation about what the fuck is going on in the world.
Please, please, please tell your wife not to hate me. I'm a very sincere, genuine guy.
Don't worry. I don't have to do that work. Very much. She knows who you are, so.
Well, I mean, I hope she knows, like she said, you know, so many months ago, that she doesn't agree with me on virtually anything, but she believes I'm genuine.
And sometimes that's all you need.
I hope that sounds true.
I think it does. So, well, as always, my friend, until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.